We crested the pass and descended into a small city, Norslof. This took me by surprise. I'd seen the Kartabla, but in the fantasy map of the world that I carried in my head, the mountains went on for much farther. We had not found Orlo, but we had at least made one pass over the landscape. Along the way, we had taken note of a few places where he might have gone. Most promising of these, to my mind, had been a small, tatterdemalion map constructed on a lookout tower originally put there to detect forest fires. It was a few miles off the road and a few thousand feet above it. We had noticed it shortly after topping the pass. If it had been a full-sized consent, they wouldn't have wanted anything to do with someone like Orlo. But such an out-of-the-way math might have welcomed an Orth-speaking wanderer who could bring them some new ideas. We stopped to eat and use toilets at a big Drummond refueling station several miles outside of Norslof's commercial center. Here it was possible to rent rooms, and it was permissible to sleep in one's vehicle. I had an idea that we might use it as a base from which to double back into the mountains and search for Orlo. I changed my mind when we walked into the mess hall, steamy and redolent of cured meats, and all of the long-range Drummond operators turned to stare at us. It was obvious that they didn't get many customers such as us and that they preferred it that way. Part of it must have been that we were a group of four in a room full of singletons. But even if we had come in one by one, we would have drawn stares. Saman was dressed in normal-looking extramuros garb, but his long beard and hair were not the norm, and the bone structure of his face marked him ethnically. The men in this room would not be able to peg him as Ita, supposing they even knew what the Ita were, but they could tell he was not one of them. Cord did not dress or move like their women. Her repertoire of gestures and facial expressions was altogether disjoint from theirs. Gneliel, being an extra, ought to have blended, but somehow didn't. He belonged to a religious community that went to great lengths to preserve its apartness from the cultural baseline, and he proclaimed as much in the way he carried himself and the looks he gave people. And I? I had no idea how I looked. Since leaving the consent, I had spent most of my time among extras who knew that I was an avowed on Peregrine. Here I was trying to pass for something I wasn't, and it seemed best to assume I was doing a terrible job of it. We might have drawn even more attention had it not been for the fact that there were spielies all over the place. They were mounted to the ceiling, angled down toward the tables. All of them ran the same feed in lockstep. At the moment we walked in the door, this showed a house burning down at night. It was surrounded by emergency workers. A close-up showed a woman leaning out of an upper-story window that was vomiting black smoke. She had a towel wrapped around her face. She dropped a baby. I kept watching to see what happened next, but instead the Spiele cycled back and showed the baby drop two more times in slow motion. Then that scene vanished and was replaced by images of a ball player making a clever play. But then it showed the same ball player breaking his leg later in the game. This, too, was repeated several times in slow motion, so that you could see the leg bending at the sight of the break. By the time we reached our table, the Spielies were showing an extraordinarily beautiful man in expensive clothes being arrested by police. My companions glanced at the images from time to time, then looked away. It seemed that they had built up some kind of immunity. I couldn't keep my eyes off of them, so I tried to sit in a position where there wasn't a Spiele directly in front of me. Still, every time the feed popped from one image to another, my eye jumped to it. I was like an ape in a tree, looking at whatever moved fastest in my environment. We sat in the corner, ordered food, and talked quietly. The room, which had gone silent when we had entered, slowly defrosted and was replenished by the normal low murmur of conversation. It occurred to me that we should not have chosen a corner table because this would make it impossible for us to get out quickly if there was some kind of trouble. I missed Leo badly. He would have assessed the threats, if any, and thought about how to counter them. And he might have gotten it completely wrong, as he had with Estimard and his sidearm. But at least he would have taken care of these matters so that I could worry about other things. Take Saman as an example. When he had joined us, I'd been glad of his company, as he knew how to do so many things that I didn't, which was all fine when it was just four of us camped by a tarn. But now that we were deep in the secular world, I recalled the ancient taboo against contact between Avout and Ida, which we could not have been breaking any more flagrantly. Did these people know of that taboo? If so, did they understand why it had been instated? Were we, in other words, stirring memories and awakening fears of old? Would their police protect us from a mob, or join in with them?